and welcome to Texplaining. We are here today with a guest speaker, and that guest speaker is Dux. How are you doing, Dux?
I'm doing well, buddy. It's been too long.
It has been a while. I think the last time that we met was at SharePoint Fest in Chicago, and we had a rather nice meal out there in Chinatown.
wait, you get to have nice meals with Dux?
I do.
I got the raw end of this deal. Every time I have food with him, it's like a balut or like a century egg.
Or century egg, right?
Yeah.
We've seen pictures of that, and let's move on. So we're also here with Mark and Rob. So how are you doing, guys?
I'm doing great. I am getting ready to go on vacation. So woohoo!
I hear you're heading this way.
I am. I'm bringing the family to London and Paris for a week. So we're going to just chill out and mostly eat great food. And my 15-year-old is excited to go to Paris for the wine and hoping he can get a beer at a pub in England, which I don't think he can yet. But
we'll make that happen.
He'll be fine.
So they don't really card or anything as long as the parent. Yeah. So he's excited. My 12-year-old's kind of disappointed because he won't. But
there is I think the law. I'll have to check this, but I think if you're eating a meal in a pub, as part of a family, they can have a beer. I think the age might be 14, but check on that.
If
he passes for a 14-year-old, they won't even.
He's 6'2" and about 220 pounds.
I brought my family to London. We were in a pub, like what Brett is saying, we're having a meal. And the server was asking my son if he wants a pint just like I ordered. So,
oh, that's cool.
Make sure he gets a Guinness, a real Guinness over there, so he can.
No, we got to go London Pride. I mean, Guinness is Guinness. You know, you got to go London Pride and find a Fuller's Pub or something like that, you know?
I don't know. Just Guinness in the UK in general is a lot better than it is over here, though. So it's a lot smoother.
I feel it tastes about the same. That was probably true.
I could agree with you. Then we'd both be wrong.
That was probably true, like in the 1950s or so. But I think today, man, when was the last time? Were you over there in the 1950s?
I can tell a difference in Ireland. I think it's not so much probably to do with the actual Guinness itself.
The water.
It's the way that it's poured and everything as well. I think they take a bit more care over pouring.
Well, and the way I saw it asking about too, and the way they clean their lines apparently they do a much better job doing that type of stuff over there. It's Guinness is more sacred over there than it is over here.
Yeah, but they brew it over there, right? In the States. Mm. Yeah. So.
Yeah,
I guess once upon a time it was brewed here and shipped over there.
I thought it was brewed there and shipped here. Do they brew Guinness here?
They do it. They do it here. They brew it.
Do they really? Oh, well, that would definitely make a difference then. Because
so then what you're saying is I'm right.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you just admitted I'm right. So we can move on now. We can move on. You said I was right. It's recorded that I'm right.
As a beer brewer, I can disagree scientifically. Yeah. No, so we're looking forward to that. It's going to be good to be away. It's been a pretty challenging couple weeks at work, so it's going to be good to get away and just, you know, see some art and enjoy the sights, you know.
For sure.
So how have things been challenging? What's going on? Anything you can talk about with us on the show?
I mean, nothing really. It's more personnel shortages, right? So we've had some people on vacation. We've had some people that have had deaths in the families. We've had, you know, just a bunch of chain of events happened. And I looked around and I was basically the only person standing for all of my company to do. Well, I was the only admin for all of the company. Right? So I've been working some pretty interesting hours and everything. So it's good, though. It's good. It's good to be needed. Well, I don't know. And so we did discover, and I was telling you guys before we started recording, just something one person may encounter this or whatever, but as a global admin, I'm sorry, as a SharePoint admin, not a global admin, SharePoint admin, you can't use the admin tools anymore to create SharePoint sites outside of your primary region. Right, so as my admin account is assigned to the European region, the primary data location is Europe, I can't create sites in the US, I can't create sites in Australia or the UK or anywhere else other than the European SharePoint tenant. So just something to keep in mind with, if you're a SharePoint admin, you're either gonna have to become an Exchange admin so that you can create groups through PowerShell, or you're gonna have to go through your Exchange team for that.
Did you find anything online about this, Rob?
There is, yes, they have posted recently a document about it. So it's and I can post it in the show notes for sure.
Mm. So this is a recent change that they've made that, so you used to be able to create the sites no matter what region you're in, but now it's...
That's right, yeah, and the buttons are still there. So, and sorry, my dog is barking at Mark in the background. But the buttons are still there to create it and everything. So if you go to, like, if you switch regions in your SharePoint admin tools, and you go to whatever region, you can still click create site, fill out the form and all that, but you get a 500 error.
Mm.
Yeah, challenging. but good. I mean, not stoppable. Nothing to stop us. You know, if you're in those regions and you try to create a group through OneDrive or whatever, everything just works, but it's going to create it in your region. So as an admin, I can't provision sites for somebody else in their region. That's the only kind of downside.
And I guess when you're the only admin in the company for this week, that's caused an extra challenge.
It has. It has. We had to get some creative. I've had some creative, constructive discussions with Microsoft support. So.
I'm sure your global colleagues won't mind sharing their credentials with you.
Well, so I'm the global. Yeah, I'm on the global team. But yeah, that's very much frowned upon. Very much frowned upon.
So Dux. Thanks for joining us today. So for our listeners who may not know who you are, why don't you tell us a bit about yourself and what you do?
Sure. I'm but a humble young little lad who grew up in this world called SharePoint. I've been at this, like a lot of you guys, in the last, I would say, over 15 years. My background is I started my career as a developer. I started programming assembler in the mid-90s and then came across what is now SharePoint. Did a lot of consulting work around that. And then the last 6 years, I work at AppPoint. We are a software company that helps organizations with SharePoint Office 365 investments to help them migrate, manage, and protect their data. These days, I serve as a CMO of AppPoint, where I get the wonderful opportunity to work with customers around the world and Microsoft and be out there and talk about the goodness of the Office 365 platform.
Very cool. Yeah, so I've known you since I think about 2008 or 2009. I think you actually, I don't know if you know this, but you were actually one of the first people to encourage me to go speak. So
I remember that conversation at dinner.
Yeah, yeah. So SharePoint Saturday DC. So yeah.
So Dux is responsible for me meeting my wife.
Really?
Absolutely. San Francisco, right?
That was in Washington D.C. at the old best practices conferences.
That correct. Billing and then after that, in San Francisco.
Yeah. Sure. Exactly. Yeah. So I think Sarah won a competition to. She was working at Siemens at the time. She knew you through Siemens because he had done a session on something there, and she got invited by you to your barbecue at your house.
Yeah.
Wow. So what impact has Dux had on your life, Rob? We were just talking about how...
Food, man. Food.
Hey, I got you to take a picture with Narcos.
You did. You did. So, yeah, it was kind of funny. We were at the Shift Happens conference. Actually, Mark and Stephanie and I were both there, and Stephen, what's his last name?
Murphy.
Stephen Murphy from the show, well, the actual CIA agent or DEA agent from the show Narcos on Netflix spoke at the conference, and he was talking, and I was thinking to myself, I was like, man, this guy sounds so much like me. Like, his accent's very similar to mine. And I was like, I'll bet he's probably at least lived where I'm from or whatever. And I asked him after the conference, after he got done with his speech, he was kind of standing around the stage. And I said, Mr. Murphy, where are you from by chance? And he told me the town, which is Murfreesboro, Tennessee, which is actually the town I literally live in right now. So he grew up in the town that I live in. So it was kind of a small world thing. And we got to chat about that. Very cool stuff.
See, now, if you're both from Arkansas, you'd somehow be related. But, yeah. You know.
other than him capturing one of the most notorious drug lords in the world.
Yeah. So, I had seen Narcos, and I had I came back, and then my wife and I started watching it again, and we watched the whole series with that one, and then I think the Narcos Mexico and all of that. So we got really into the series, and really cool stuff though, really neat neat stuff. But Dux, I've always followed your food. I think we follow each other's food stuff, and both of us being foodies, so I've always enjoyed that. And I know every time we get together, we try to go out to have a nice meal. So I've always appreciated that.
I got to get on the nice meals. I gotta tell you guys.
You stick to the meals that Dux gives you and eat them.
Yes, sir.
I took you to Korean barbecue here in DC a while ago. Remember?
That was a long time ago though. So we're due for another one.
Did they do the octopus stuff? That the moving octopus?
No.
Oh, see, that's a Dux meal right there. That's I would expect no less than from Dux when I'm out.
So can we even describe what you did eat last, Brackley?
Yeah. So was it at Shift Happens or was it at, was the conference before that in DC? SharePoint Fest. Yeah. So we have what's called a century egg, and it tasted like astringent is what it tasted like. I would not recommend it. I think the balut actually tasted better than the century egg.
So a century egg, it's a couple hundred years old. Back in the days, you may imagine, there's no refrigerators. It's a way to preserve eggs. So essentially, they would take, I guess it's hard-boiled eggs, but they would ferment it and keep it under the ground for weeks and weeks with stuff on it. It'll come out as black. It looks nasty, smells nasty, and tastes nasty too. So.
Yeah. Yeah, the balut had a gross texture, but it actually tasted fine. It was kind of like a pate, but the century egg, I have no desire to eat one of those again.
Now, the balut, does it have feathers in it, or is it pre-feathers?
A little bit.
A little bit, yeah. It's not enough to have a big feather texture, but you can see them.
With balut, folks that are listening may not be familiar, so essentially it could be egg or chicken. Imagine this chick or duckling is about to hatch a week or 2 weeks before about to hatch, and then they boil it. So as you imagine, when you crack it open, you would see little chick or duckling. Yeah.
It's not like, it's not crunchy, right? It's not.
You have to pull the beak off though, right?
No, the beak's not formed enough, I don't think. Or if it is, you can just chew through it.
Yeah, it's tender.
Yeah.
So this is for all those vegans out there, right?
Exactly. We just lost our whole vegan audience. All two of them.
Lost a ton of following.
Ah, food. I love food.
So what's your latest challenge, Dux? What are you working on?
Yeah, so obviously Teams is the cool kid on the block. I think this year is the most travel I've done. It's only October 3rd. I've clocked 185,000 miles. I just came back from Tokyo and Melbourne, where I met with customers in Microsoft, and Teams is blowing up. And while the excitement is awesome, organizations, especially large ones, are realizing how they can make it easy for people to do the right thing. I mean, it's the age old governance, right? Where ideally, everybody should be mature enough, should be grown up enough to do the right thing, but they're seeing a lot of problems. So just being out there talking about ways that they can overcome it with out of the box, PowerShell, Azure ADP1, or if that's not enough, we have ways and solutions to help them.
Do you focus, what's your focus that you're, now that you're traveling, what are you traveling for? Are you mostly doing it for meeting with customers, or are you focused on marketing since you're the CMO, the marketing of the product? What are you doing?
It's all of the above. So while I hold the title of CMO, I think I come from a unique background where I'm not your traditional marketer. It's funny, like, especially in other regions where, people don't know me as well. They're like, what's the marketing guy doing in a customer meeting, right? I'm technical enough, and because I carry the Microsoft Regional Director designation and MVP designation, so that helps with some of our opportunities. So really, I do three jobs when I travel. One is marketing stuff. be it at events, I speak at events, stand at our booth, talk to customers. Second is I meet with customers. So everywhere I go, the local team would line up customer meetings. I go in there, and it could be as formal as facilitating a workshop or just sit in a meeting with decision makers, talk through what they have, provide some guidance. And then third, I meet with my immediate team. So for me, for my team, I have about a team of 55 to 60 people around the world. So it's always great to go to that region and meet with colleagues face-to-face. Mm.
So what are the sizes of the organizations you typically meet with? Like, are they big, sure. Small?
Yeah. So for, especially when I travel, it's typically larger organizations. So for example, when I was in, a few months ago, I was in Germany. I met with an organization that's like 250,000 people. Another organization I met in Australia last week, they have 40,000 people. So it's typically larger organizations. I think just by nature of me traveling and, you know, I guess the local team figured I might as well schedule meetings with larger organizations. And I get to share what we do here. So what I found is in the US, a lot of larger organizations are either a year or a couple years ahead in terms of adoption. So I get to talk about and share, oh, this is what organization X has done similar to yours. I talk a lot about the government. So while sometimes we, you know, we can complain about the government, our government here is actually much more ahead in terms of cloud adoption. So when I meet with government organizations outside of the US, I get to share what we see, what they've done, et cetera.
Yeah, that's really shocking too, because typically governments, our government, I would think would be very, very cloud averse, but they seem to have adopted it very quickly.
Yeah, this has a lot to do with a mandate 5 years ago with a FedRAMP compliance about, no, maybe it's more than 5 years now, 7 years. At some point, in fact, in the former administration, they decided that any IT upgrade for the federal government has to be cloud first. If you want to go cloud first, it's called a FedRAMP compliance, which is great, which is really forward thinking. And in fact, when it comes to the point when you need to upgrade your technology and you don't want cloud first, you have to come up with a justification why you're not going to the cloud. So as you may imagine, fast forward 5-6 years later, a lot of technology upgrade, most of everybody's in the cloud, and that cascaded down to the state and local level. What we're seeing is because federal agencies are much bigger, so it takes them a little longer and they have more resources. And, you know, a lot of big government agencies have data centers and whatnot, but the adoption of state and local government is actually much faster because they're, you know, less resources. They don't have much to move. So you see a lot of, for example, Teams adoption in the US government are state and local agencies. Federal agencies are moving along, but the US government is moving forward with cloud.
Do they take advantage of the government side of the Microsoft cloud?
Yes.
Or do all of them go there, or do some of them come out?
Yeah. So in the US there is four Microsoft clouds. So there's one, which is commercial, which is for all private commercial companies. And then there's the GCC, the government community cloud, which is, I would call, the base level. So state and local agencies are there, federal civilian agencies are there, and it has a lot of the certifications they need, like FedRAMP, Moderate, CGIS, you know, it's a certification for state and local. And then the next level is it's the GCC High, which has high level certification. And then they have L5 for DOD. And then they have the secret cloud, which is for intelligence agencies. I don't really know why they talk about it if it's secret, but they call it the secret cloud. And this covers everything, Office 365, Azure, and Dynamics.
Do you lose capabilities when you move around to each of those clouds, or do you get everything?
No, so not that you lose it, but the capabilities are slower to light up. So for example, in GCC, in Teams, let's talk about Teams, you still don't have apps. Certain tabs are not available, so you can't even, you know, stick a tab for SharePoint. So it's still bare bones because every workload needs to be certified at the application level. So it's a lot. So imagine Planner getting certified, Microsoft Flow. So every single application has to be certified through certain compliance requirements.
Hmm. What is Microsoft's commitment on that? Are they looking to bring everything up to full certification for this stuff, or are there certain workloads that they're not?
They are, as far as I know. It just takes longer. That's where the frustration of a lot of government agencies are, where publicly, right, you see all these marketing and Ignite and, oh, look at this new feature and all that. Oh, by the way, if you're a government, not available for you. You got to wait 12 to 18 months. So they are. They're committed to do it. It just, you know, going through the process.
Yeah.
But I think down the road, give it within 2 years, all the core things should be readily available. And you're seeing that across different countries as well. So the US was the first country that Microsoft had a separate cloud environment for government, but they already lit up cloud environments for government in Australia as well. So I'm pretty sure that's going to start happening in a lot of the major regions around the world.
Very cool.
And so did you see anything? I don't know if you mentioned just now whilst you were in Japan, but you we're talking about governments. Did you have dealings with Japanese governments, and how are they working towards the cloud and everything now?
Yeah. So personally, I didn't see any go to any meeting with Japanese government, but as a company, we do work with the Japanese state and local agencies and federal and even the military. They're still behind, meaning they're still that on-prem mindset. They're considering the cloud, but it's still not there. However, what's fascinating is talking about commercial companies, private companies, they're all in. I mean, think about, I don't know what the exact stat is, but outside of the US, Microsoft's fastest growing cloud business is UK and Japan. And I'm like, why Japan? Japan's such a small country, but you think about a lot of the headquarters are there, right? Like big car companies, media companies, tech companies. So a lot of them are moving to the cloud, for airlines.
Mm-hmm. So I recently attended an event. It was called Entrepreneur 5.0, and it was based on a model that was introduced from the Japanese government called Society 5.0. Mm. This is all basically around a roadmap that the Japanese government has produced about a super smart society. So we've Society 4.0 being, you know, the sort of introduction of mobile phones and information through emails and things like this. But the 5.0 is about the Internet of Things and big data and
AI
and that sort of thing. And it's quite interesting reading to see how they're sort of putting this plan together for companies to start adopting this technology in moving forwards, and how that maps through to business owners as well, and how they that they need to innovate more.
but one thing what's fascinating, while on one hand we think of Japan as very technocentric, forward thinking, there's a lot of cultural considerations as well. So for example, like if we think about Teams here in the Western culture, you know, the first use cases around Teams would be chatting or document collaboration, all that, right? But that whole concept of ad hoc work, people just talking and jumping on each other, does not exist in that culture. So in the Japanese culture, everything is hierarchical, right? And there's this idea that you cannot show uncompleted work. Everything has to be formalized and put together as best you can before you present it, mm-hmm. which is counter to what Teams is about.
Right.
That's why email is still big. So for the longest time, I couldn't figure out, like even my own colleagues, I would get really well-formed formal emails about certain activities. Whereas for me, if I send email internally, it's just a one-liner. Yes, no, maybe, right? And even with Teams, they don't immediately respond. If I am somebody on Teams, it would be this formal, well put together paragraph. And it's because of the culture. That's how it is. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, so why is Teams still growing there, right? If it's not being used this way. What's fascinating, what I've learned from Microsoft, is the most widely adopted capability of Teams is not chat, it's not collab, but the extensibility of Teams. So think bots, think apps on Teams, think they're hooking up teams to all these line of business systems to provide automation, which hits on what Brett's talking about, where they're looking at next gen, streamlining work through automation, through AI, but not necessarily through this idea of better collaboration and document management.
I had never actually thought about that before. Yeah, because I see what you're saying about the culture thing there, and I haven't thought about how that clashes with collaboration.
So another example, right? Again, it's not right or wrong, it's just different. So for the longest time, in the back of my mind, I'm like, look, Japan, especially Tokyo, it's a metropolitan city. It's synonymous to New York, London, you know, Shanghai, Berlin. But I've always wondered how come English is still not as common as I thought it would be. And finally, I got an answer that made sense. So my colleague said, you know, because of this culture of perfection, people don't want to try to make a mistake speaking another language. They can type it, they can read it, but not many people really speak it fluently unless they've been educated or they lived outside of Japan. And I'm like, but there's no way you can be perfect in another language from day one. So hence that, right?
Some of us are not even perfect in English, though. So. Right, Mark?
I resemble that remark. So then, okay. So as you travel the world, it sounds like you travel the world a lot more than we do. What are like the big concerns you're seeing having organizations adopt this technology? I mean, there's gotta be some kind of, I know we have our common things we see over here. Do you see it being different over there? Like what's some of the big blockers from people adopting?
Yeah. So there's, you know, the common things, right? Obviously governance is thing, adoption, but few things that stick out is, for example, in Europe, this, and Brett, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, the idea of privacy, I guess in light of things like GDPR, personal information, that's huge, right? There's always concerns around, well, it's in Microsoft's data center. How, even though it's in the local regional data center, it's still in Microsoft's data center. It's not our data center, especially for large companies. That's a big concern. Second is, I think, especially Australia, this idea of retention. While Microsoft is investing heavily on providing better retention capabilities, better information and records management capabilities, especially through things like, you know, labels in E5, at least customers I met with last week in Australia, they're like, it's still not enough. So those are the two things that stand out for me compared to the conversations I have here in North America.
Yeah, and GDPR, you mentioned on GDPR, I mean, that over here is it's still a pain. I mean, it certainly has its advantages as far as, you know, the consumer and protecting their data and so on. But in some aspects, it's really, that there's so many people trying to cash in on it. Mm-hmm. things like service agreements, user license agreements, it's got to be talking about personal data everywhere, and every single solicitor or lawyer that you talk to, they want to charge an absolute fortune for a paragraph. You know, yeah. It's just to protect you, and they'll say, you look, we want to investigate everything that you do with personal data and so on throughout your organization. It's like, no, the product's not doing anything with personal data at all. I have to have this paragraph.
But let me ask you this, right? So for example, in GDPR, there's a section there around, or an article about right to be forgotten.
Yep.
So if you interpret that, essentially what that means is, for example, I left a company and I can tell my former employer said, please do not leave a trace of any information about me across email, across Word document, across a post on Teams, anything. But then it's a gray area, right? But what if I'm in some email chain or a conversation chain that needs to be preserved? Does that mean we have to get rid of that? So so that's one. But then second is, technically, maybe I don't know how to do it, but I don't even think you could do it easily. I can't just go to, you know, Office 365 Admin Center and say, any occurrence of Brett, get rid of it, right?
Yeah. That one would be pretty.
Yeah, because you can tag and classify the heck out of it, but it's still, there are things that at least today, technically, you're gonna have to spend a lot of money and resources and manpower to be able to pull that off.
Yep, certainly. And I mean, the building these processes around GDPR and so on for, you know, a large organization, they can absorb that cost for it. But when you're a smaller organization as well, it's, you know, manpower is already at a minimum. You've got resources that are stretched, and trying to implement all of that across the board is certainly a difficult thing. Yeah.
So Rob, how are you guys doing? I mean, being a global organization.
Well, it's very difficult. Because we don't, you know, it's because the laws are much different, you know, as you go around the world, right? So if they're different in for GDPR for the EU than they are in China, than they are in Germany, even, right? So Germany's something else completely different. So we've for the most part, we're bringing things in together as we start migrating people up to the cloud. I think we've got about we've just topped 300,000 users that we put in the cloud in Office 365 from around the world. The most of the European countries are on board now that we've got a lot of the, you know, the data residency is kind of the big thing that we have rather than the people data, because as a private company, you know, the people data is kind of an easy thing, right? I think it's when you start getting out into the public sector, you're sure. Handling public people's data. Data residency is a big thing. And then, so as people are coming on board with, you know, wanting their data resident in their country, if Microsoft has a data center there, we will spin up a tenant there, so that the, you know, things like OneDrive and you know, Teams, yeah, file data, you know, all of the SharePointy stuff can live in that region. Same with Exchange, right? So Exchange is even better, because there's even more availability of those things for Exchange. China's an interesting one. I don't know if you've spent much time there. We ended up going to spin up their own separate tenant for China only. Yeah. And they it's not connected to our main tenant. It's completely separate. Yeah. And there's a lot of legal stuff there with prison sentences, right? If you mess that up, somebody's going to jail in China.
Yeah, and what's interesting there is because of legal issues, Microsoft essentially outsourced their cloud business to a local partner called 21 VNet. That's one. So it's a separate entity. And second is, because we are in that, our technologies live there. We do have customers there. But just like what I was describing with a government tenant here, they don't have all the latest. So for example, Teams does not exist, as far as I know, in China's instance of Office 365 today.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right. Yeah. So it's very much kind of I don't want to say a watered down experience, but a very controlled sub experience of the overall platform. Mm-hmm. You know. So yeah, I mean, it's always challenging. I mean, it really is, because it's not. I feel it's kind of frustrating for me, because as somebody that wants people to collaborate and wants to be able to work with, you know, my colleagues around the world, you have everything working in a very harmonious way, and then you have this other thing that has to get started that's completely different.
I mean, you talked about Germany. There are laws, union laws, where at 5 o'clock, no more email, no more chats, no more. I'm like, but what if I have just this brilliant idea that I want to share? You can't. Mm-hmm. Hold it till tomorrow.
Better write it down. You know, I kind of wish we had that here in the States, though. I think it's great for people to unplug, to force people to unplug.
But that's true.
Unfortunately, we do not.
Yeah, that would be a good thing. And I think it's changing a lot in companies now, where they're moving to 4-day weeks and things like that as well. It's apparently people more productive.
we've been on the work from home schedule for probably 10 years now. And 10 years ago, that was just super progressive, right? It's just, you always, you know, I think about in 2009, right? I mean, everybody went to an office. Everybody I knew went to, you had to physically be on site, sit there for 8 to 15 hours, and then go home. But you had to physically be on site. And I think more and more companies are adopting that and the tools are just better, right? I mean, there were many, even 10 years ago, there were many times there were just things I couldn't do unless I was physically in the office.
You know? Well, and the internet was better as well.
So, I mean, the tools are better. And I think as we've adopted more and more of these cloud-based tools, it makes it easier for me to work wherever I am, whenever I need to work, and have access to things. If I don't even have my laptop with me, I could work on my, you know, off of my phone and be able to review documents and do things, just because those tools just weren't there. It wasn't a thing back then. Even if they were in the cloud, we didn't have it. And they're just so good now to where you don't physically have to be in an office. And I think it's great.
Especially when Surface Duo comes out, right?
Exactly. Hey, have you, speaking of, as a technophile here, have you seen the new Surface Hit earphones, the headphones?
No, well, I've seen it. I haven't used it. Is it good? No, the earplugs are
the earplugs.
Yeah, circular thing.
Yeah, I don't like those at all. No, I think those are just nasty.
It's too big. It looks.
Well, if people wear those ugly AirPods, they're going to wear these as well. I'm sorry. I still think the AirPods are like some of the stupidest things I've ever seen.
Well, the AirPods look like regular.
They Apple look headphones. Like a scene from Something About Mary.
Oh.
Which you know scene what, are you talking about?
but with the AirPods, it became a norm. When it first came out, it looked weird, but now everybody does it. So I guess, it normalizes.
Right. So this will normalize as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
I doubt it. I think these are McNasty. I just think they look ridiculous. You heard it here first.
Some of the things, have you seen some of the things kids are putting in their ears these days? Like the holes? I think these it's.
Yeah. Not a fan. Personal preference.
So
I'd rather eat one of those eggs.
I guess this brings us to it's just kind of popped up here, but what kind of like technology that's out today, like consumer technology, excites you right now?
There's a lot like this one. So I was sharing with everybody, I just got I love glasses. So I just got this pair of Bose glasses. So it has, what's fascinating to me is the sound is going through the temple. So the sound sounds great. I can speak through it and I can still hear, my environment.
So for our listeners, since this is an audio only podcast, we're on video right now and Dux actually has these glasses on. So they are the Bose, what are they called? The Bose glasses or what?
Yeah. They call it sunglasses, but you can change the lenses.
So if I'm sitting next to you, like just say in an airport, I come and plop down next to Dux. I don't know you. You've got your glasses on. You're on a conference call. You're listening to music. Can I hear that? Or is
no,
it something that's
you
just
cannot. Familiar? You cannot hear it. But
you
I
just
look,
think it's weird.
I sound crazy just talking out loud. But you cannot hear it.
That's have you flown with them?
Yes.
And do they work as well on an airplane? Can you still hear them?
No, you cannot hear it because of the noise. So for airplane, I have noise canceling.
Yeah. I've been a huge Bose noise canceling headphones for airplanes for years. And I tell people all the time, it's like I bought the very first pair. And then after 3 or 4 years, when I wear them out, I can go back to the Bose store and trade them in on a new pair for like $100.
Exactly. That's what happened to me. And people don't know that. They're like, oh, Bose is expensive, but you get what you pay for, right? You use it for 4 years or so. You go back $100. That's it.
It's cheaper for me because I've got the ones, the QC3s that have the rechargeable battery in them. It's cheaper for me to go upgrade my headphones than it is to go buy a new battery. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's crazy.
Yes. And then the other technology, speaking of technology, what excites me is I recently got a really nice electric scooter. For the entire month of September, I quit driving. So what I would do, I would take the scooter to the bus stop, take the bus, take the metro, carry the scooter with me and go to work.
No kidding. How did that work out?
It's great. I figured, well, here's the reason. So I really wanted it. My wife's like, you drive. Why do you need a scooter? I go, okay, I'm going to stop driving. And that was my reason. And then I'm actually saving money because of that.
Seriously. And the environment. You're saving the environment too. So don't forget about that.
I look weird though, because I live in the suburbs of DC. So early in the morning, I'll be scootering on the sidewalk to the bus stop. People look at me weird. And some people would actually give me two thumbs up. It's like, good for you. But
how far are you to the bus stop?
About 2 miles.
Oh, really? Oh, wow. And how long does it take you to get there?
10 minutes. Because the one I got could do 19 miles per hour.
And you do while looking like you're talking to yourself.
That's right. Wearing glasses. I'm still doing calls.
So have you tried doing the glasses with earplugs in?
Yes.
So, I mean, that makes a huge – I've got a pair of those, they're called skull candies that, like, go through your temples as well. When you put earplugs in, it's, like, even the sound's a lot more rich.
Correct.
It's crazy. So, I didn't know if I tried to go with airplanes.
So, that vibrates off of your temple and then it makes the sound in your – oh, right.
Yeah. And try it. And then put earplugs in while you're doing it, and it's, like, a totally different experience. So, that's how my running earphones are, that type. So, I can hear traffic behind me and stuff. on the dirt roads in Arkansas.
Great. What else? What else do you guys want to talk about?
What about Ignite? So Ignite's coming up. You got anything special planned for Ignite?
Yeah, just like I just signed the paperwork for our Ducati.
So, I'm winning it this year. I say this every single conference. I'm winning the Ducati.
So I got Ducati and Red Party, obviously. So this year we're doing a little bit different. So in the past few years, the ideal Red Party, obviously, is to invite top customers and top partners. And the past few years, we didn't have enough runway to invite customers. So we invited customers early on, and we started inviting them in July. A lot of great confirmations already. So we've got a lot of customers coming. And we decided that there's not going to be different color bands. If you're not familiar in the past, oh, you're the VIP band, you're the whatever band. It really doesn't matter, because once the venue's packed, the venue's packed.
We had some very strongly worded statements packed at us last year. I think Brett, you were with me. I think you might have been with us too, Mark, right? When we rocked up with our VIP band, and we thought we could just go to the front of the line, and we rocked up to the front of the line, and man, people were angry.
I would have to say last year, I'm not going to name names, there were people coming in saying, "You don't know who I am. Do you know who I am?"
I did that one time, okay? That wasn't me, for the record. It wasn't me.
And the bouncer had to – and this person was clearly intoxicated too. So.
Wow.
But so yeah, get there early is what you're saying.
What's that?
So get there early is what you're saying.
Yeah. And then obviously sessions. Go ahead, Brett.
I have to drop off because I've got the kids to pick up. Okay. Let you guys carry on.
Cheers.
I'll see you
at Ignite.
Yeah, take care. Yeah. Bye.
But excited this year. I have a couple sessions. I'm doing a session on Teams and Office 365 delegation administration. So that's going to be fun. And then another session on diversity and inclusion. I know, Mark, you're doing a couple too. But session on diversity and inclusion, I'm going to talk about generational diversity. Because all this conversation, what you see publicly is always about gender diversity, racial diversity, religious diversity, and age diversity, but there's not enough conversation around how do you maximize generational diversity in the workforce. So I'll talk about that.
Yeah. That's finally my chance to be diverse.
and then a couple of podcasts. We're launching a podcast starting Ignite.
Oh, you are?
Not to compete with this podcast, but we're going to launch a podcast called Shift Happens.
All right.
Just to carry on that brand. And the difference is this is a 15-20 minute podcast. Every episode is with a customer that will talk about how they transform, good, bad, ugly. That's it. So
that's awesome. Cool. That's awesome. Now, on your podcast stuff, have you got the equipment kind of purchased and stuff? What kind of equipment are you looking to use?
I don't know the team. So I have brilliant colleagues that's already set this up. I've heard the sample already, from the intro music, all that. It's going to be good.
Yeah. Well, I'll talk to your people at Ignite. I'm just curious as a podcaster. I'm just curious as to what, how do they set up a studio? Is it mobile? I mean, what are you? Because there's a billion different ways to do it.
Yeah, right? we have dual setup. We have, so in our Arlington office here, next time when you come up, we built a full-on studio, not only for podcasts, but videos and all that. So we could do it there. But we have a mobile setup too, so we'll bring that to Ignite.
Okay. That's awesome. That is really cool. I know it will be an amazing podcast for sure. I know you guys are, I was at Shift Happens with Mark and Stephanie and some just amazing customers. And I got to hear so many customer stories there as well and share my own. It was just so cool. And I'm really looking forward to that.
So along that lines, we're going to announce, I guess I'm announcing here first, Shift Happens next year. We'll launch it in a few weeks, registration. We have a couple of good speakers lined up already, but the venue is really cool. So stay tuned.
And can you say where it's going to be at yet, or we have to wait and see?
Just wait and see.
Okay.
It's not going to be at a hotel. That's for sure.
Is it in DC again this year?
In DC. It's going to be in DC again, because DC is the most central place for at least a lot of our customers.
What about Branson? Branson's not central. That's the middle of the country, right?
For most of our customers.
By then, the White House might be vacant. So if it's there, that'd be awesome.
We want to go there?
We don't want to lose our other two listeners, so maybe.
Awesome. How about you guys? Ignite, all set?
Yeah, I'm actually flying in on Friday because I'm spending the day with you. So
yeah,
looking forward to that. And then I've got the like three or four sessions and the podcast. So it's going to be a busy week for me, but I'm looking forward to it.
Good.
Yep, I'm flying in on Saturday and going to be ready to, I guess, start hit the MVP summits or sessions on Sunday. And just looking forward to getting down there and spending time with folks.
We should run again, Rob and Mark. Last year, I thought that was cool when we went out running that one morning. We did what, 10 miles?
10 miles, yeah. Yeah, you guys did. You guys finished way ahead of me, and Brett kind of ducked out at 6, but I went on back around and finished at 10. Hopefully, it won't be as humid this year because last year was just so hot, you know.
But now it's November, it should be better. And I'm training for a marathon, actually. My marathon is on November 15 in Richmond.
Oh, so it's right after that then. Yeah, you'll be tapering, right.
Yeah, I'm already tapering, which is fine because now I'm doing my long runs. This weekend, I'm going to do my 16 miles. So.
Oh, that's awesome. Are you excited? I mean, are you running for a charity or just running the marathon just to do it?
I'm just running peer pressure, I guess. A bunch of folks. Last year, I did half marathon. And this year, a bunch of folks are running full. I'm like, okay, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. How do you balance the time training with your work schedule and travel schedule?
So what's actually interesting is, so I'm on this 20-week program where the long runs are weekends. But as you know, with all these travel, I find the running actually helps me recalibrate with jet lag, but also just energizes me. So for example, I was in Tokyo for 3 days last week, and then I went to Melbourne, Australia. Tokyo to Melbourne is like an 11-hour flight. As soon as I landed in the morning around 7, I got to the hotel, dropped my stuff off, and did a 6-mile run, and that powered me through the day. So it's good.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
Huh. I could not ever make that same statement. If we go for a run in Orlando, I'll be ducking out about mile 4, just to give you a warning right now.
All right, guys. Well, I'd say we wrap it up. This has been a great show. And Ducks, thank you so much for your time today and to spend time with us. And I'm looking forward to catching up at Ignite and
sure.
following your travels until then. So.
All right. Yeah, well, thank you guys for having me and looking forward to seeing you.
Absolutely. Thanks, Ducks.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye.